JT, live in Vegas.
From the Las Vegas Strip, right to our studios on Flamingo.
Woohoo!
I'm here because I got to put two kids through college.
LeBron.
We ask everybody to participate, from Uber drivers to taxi drivers to bartenders. I mean, I never slow down. I stand up in the studio. I'm excited to be on the radio. I like energetic callers who have opinions. Sound off like you got a pair.
Woohoo!
Oh, I'm cranky Yankee. How do the Yankees lose a game like this? Are you kidding me?
And now, live from Las Vegas, here's JT the Brick.
It's Friday. JT with you from Lotus Broadcasting, Fox Sports Radio, 1340 AM, 98.9 FM, brought to you by our friends at Golden Entertainment, owner of PT Sierra Gold, Sean Patrick's, the Stratosphere. Love it. Love the SG Bar, and I love everything about the monologue sponsored by our friends at PT's. A good show today. We're going to be all over the place. I like to say all over the ice is a term. And we got four guests that are going to pop in and out here. We're going to keep it going really fast, heading into the national show with Looney at the top of the hour. Steve Fezzik, the only two-time winner of the Super Contest, will join us at about 20 after. We'll get some picks from him or where he's going heading into NFL and college football season. Fairway Jay, my buddy who is good at golf, really good. And I talked to him today. I want winners at the Open Championship. I wanted to have him on after the cut on Friday heading into the weekend. He'll join us at about 4:40. New contributor to the show, my friend Elise, who I think you're going to like a lot. She's really good at what she does. She also blogs with me at the National Football Post. Elise Rapon, she's going to talk about NFL football arrests. She keeps a tally of football players who get arrested. And she breaks it down scientifically. That's a big topic, you have to admit, over the summer, is who got arrested, who didn't get arrested. We'll talk to her. And Jerry Coleman, who's probably the most informed Baltimore Orioles insider on Manny Machado leaving Baltimore and what the Dodgers get, as he will be in the lineup tonight, right in the middle of the lineup, playing for the Dodgers. I think that was a great move by the Dodgers. I had the general manager of the Dodgers on last night. We'll get into that in a minute, and I think that's enough to get the Dodgers back to the World Series. Could be wrong. Cubs got hammered today. There are the Nationals. You look around the league trying to figure out who's the best team in the National League. The Brewers have been making noise. Atlanta's been great. I think what the Dodgers did, and I don't think the Dodgers are done just yet, what are the Giants going to do? Are they going to start trading off players or put up a fight here down the stretch? We'll get into baseball a little bit later on in the show. Two things I want to lead with before we have Jerry Coleman coming up. First is this firestorm about Jimmy Garoppolo taking the porn star out the night of the ESPYs. Bobby, who runs the show, is porn star friendly, as he's nodding his head. And there's no law against taking porn stars out to dinner. Matter of fact, raise your hand or beep your horn if a friend of yours is a porn star and you want to go to the beach, go to a movie, go out to dinner. There's nothing wrong with that. But when you're Jimmy Garoppolo and you could literally date anyone on the planet, from swimsuit models to movie stars, you know where I'm going there, down that road, royalty, he's that good looking, he could literally date royalty around the world. He decided to take out a 40-plus-year-old porn star, and it's blowing up the internet. TMZ can't get enough of this. They're reposting it every few minutes. So the issue becomes, is this our business or not? I mean, it really is our business if a football player takes a knee during the anthem. I think that's our business. It's national news. But who an athlete dates, where he takes that date to, shouldn't be our business unless that said athlete is holding hands with a porn star walking her through a Beverly Hills restaurant. Then it's public. Now, a lot of people have been tweeting this and coming back at me hard on this. Again, I'm just talking about a sports radio topic. I'd never bring this up if he wasn't the quarterback of the 49ers. Please. I got two kids who are listening to this show. I would not be bringing this topic up if it wasn't a big, big, big topic in the Bay Area. But as I tweeted out about 2 hours ago at JT the Brick, my tweet was, can you name me anything close to I don't give a blank what anyone thinks of me, including my owners, teammates, and fans, than this move by a franchise quarterback ever? So the responses I got, read you some of the responses. Horrible, JT. Horrible PR move. But then again, it's San Francisco. Another guy, Jagged Mark, who always tweets, says 99% of the people don't care if a single millionaire worth a ton of money is dating a porn star. But for some reason, you seem to have an interest, JT. And he's going back and forth here. This one comes in from Todd Link. JT, he's paid to play football, not appease the masses. Don't like it. Too bad. Right on, Jimmy G. So the reason I bring this up is no one's ever done this before. Nobody. It's never been done. Joe Namath never did this. Joe Namath had restaurants and bars and hung out with starlets, but he never went down this road. Tom Brady's married to Giselle. He got divorced. He was married to Bridget Moynihan, then went to Giselle. You never saw Tom Brady walking around Beverly Hills holding the hand of a porn star. Aaron Rodgers wore a tuxedo the same night, and he was in the front row of the ESPYs as his girlfriend, mistake, Danica Patrick, hosted the ESPYs. Aaron Rodgers, pretty big name, wouldn't you agree? He's not rolling through Beverly Hills with a porn star. So I'd love your reaction to this because people have told me since I moved here and moved back here that this is a Niner town. And I said, why? They said, well, there's a big Hawaiian contingency in Vegas, and the Hawaiians love the Niners. Northern California, very close, obviously, to Nevada. A lot of Niner fans there. So I'm throwing this out to you Niner fans. This is the future home of the Raider Nation. Derek Carr is a born-again Christian. He's a faith guy. Married with a couple of kids. I can promise you Derek Carr would never do this. I can guarantee it. And I'm not in the business of guarantees. I don't think he would do it. What message does this send to the Niners ownership, the York family, to his teammates, and the rest of the San Francisco fan base? Because some people are tweeting back at me. It says, JT, no matter, he can do whatever he wants, but it shows bad judgment. Well, why? You can't have a porn star as a friend. No, it's because he actually hooked up with her. And people in TMZ, not me, TMZ's putting together that they were able to connect, you know, connect how you do social media. And she probably said, yeah, I'll hook up with you, but you got to take me to dinner. Right, guys? You got to take me to dinner first. So I bring that up here because the amount of reaction we're getting at Fox Sports Radio is incredible. I'd like to hear from you. 702-876-1340. Don't say I'm going in the gutter. I didn't do this. I didn't walk into a restaurant doing this. I'm not the face of the 49ers. Do you have a problem with this judgment call by Jimmy G, the future of the 49ers? 876-1340 is the number here. Again, Manny Machado will be playing shortstop for the Dodgers going forward. I think that is a really big deal. I think that will put the Dodgers over the top. I think that will put the Dodgers in a position where I pointed out they have a Kawhi Leonard-type player now. They got a player who can play tremendous defense overall. I mean, amazing defense at shortstop or third base, and a guy who can hit in the middle of the lineup. So overall, when you take a look at all this, this is a really big deal for the Dodgers going forward. And I think the Dodgers are in a position now to go out and possibly win a World Series. If you're a Dodger fan, do you like this move? And a lot of people are saying that he's a pure rental, that he wants to play for the Yankees. That he has said, and we'll ask this to Jerry, who's going to come up here in a few moments, that he wants to be a Yankee and that the Dodgers are only getting him as a rental. Why not? I mean, rentals are fine. Look at the Warriors. They got DeMarcus Cousins. That might be a rental overall. When you look at these deals and how these deals are playing out, if you can't win a championship, what's wrong with getting a rental in the short term to get you a championship? Dodgers have been waiting since 1988, and that's been a really, really long time for them to get going again. If this is the difference between them winning a World Series or not, who could rip the Dodgers for making that move? One of the best sports talk hosts in Baltimore, my good friend Jerry Coleman, joins us on Fox Sports Radio. Jerry, good to talk to you. Thanks for making time. Stepping away from your crab cakes, what's the reaction? What's the reaction in Baltimore to losing Machado?
Well, I mean, it was a foregone conclusion, JT, but people are upset, obviously, and disappointed. They thought the Orioles had a chance to keep him. They're so... still some delusional people who think that he's going to come back here after the season, which is impossible. I mean, the club is in a rebuilding mode for the first time ever. So the return of five players, I think, on paper, look good to ownership. You have to look at the quality of what they got back, and a lot of the guys, at least four of the five, are in their 20s, so they're going to have them under club control for a while. That's the way they view it. They got a guy like Yansiel Diaz, a guy they could not afford through the international market, so they got him in a cheap way by trading one of their best players ever. So that's the way people here are looking at it, but also the fact they weren't able to obtain one of the Dodgers' top three prospects is kind of disappointing, to be honest.
Yeah, Jerry, I think that's the key. I had the GM of the Dodgers on last night. Looney and I asked that question, and he thinks he gave up a lot, but he's going to say that right publicly there. But I thought that overall the Orioles would want a little bit more out of that. And what are the Baltimore fans saying in the media, including yourself? Do you think you got fleeced, or there's potential with maybe one of these two prospects, two or three of them, making it to the big leagues?
I thought the Orioles got fleeced. I put out a tweet saying as much last night. And then I got a phone call from a very high-ranking executive with the Orioles who laid it out to me and educated me on the whole deal. And he said to me, you don't know what the Phillies were offering. You don't know what the Brewers were offering. You don't know what the Indians were offering. So how do you know that we didn't settle for the best deal? So that was laid out to me. And the fact that, listen, they waited too long to make this deal. That was my pet peeve. They should have done this at the All-Star break a year ago because they were out of contention. They thought they were three games out of the wild card. It was fool's gold. They were belated in making this move. But the person that I spoke to laid it out to me, and the fact that he thinks that four of the five players certainly will reach the major leagues, and they're under club control for a long time. But you give away a guy like Manny Machado, you expect more. And this person also told me, had the Orioles been in pennant contention, which is ludicrous, they would have held on to Machado till the end of the year, let him walk, and got the 35th draft pick, which is insane. So the Angelos sons are about to take over the franchise from Peter Angelos. Hopefully that will provide a new direction. We finally heard the word rebuild today. They brought back Brooks Robinson. They're working on Cal Ripken to be a part of the franchise going forward, things that Peter Angelos wasn't able to accomplish. So at least the good news is there's a turn of the tide here in Baltimore.
Jerry Coleman's our guest, Baltimore radio host and insider. Does an unbelievable job covering the Ravens, the Orioles, everything that goes down in that great city. Jerry, is he going to the Yankees? Reports are that he wants to be a Yankee. But once you get to L.A. with the Dodgers have a great way of paying players, let alone convincing stars to stay in Hollywood. What's your gut tell you?
Well, if he goes to the Yankees, it'll be, my gut will hurt because it's your Yankees. He'll come back here, you know, 9 to 10 times a year and haunt the Orioles. I'd like to see him in the National League. I think if the Dodgers make a run with him or he produces immensely, there's no choice but to keep him. If they make a run and reach the World Series or win a World Series, how can you let this guy go away if he's part of the leadership in that group of leading them there? If not, then he'll test the market. But the Dodgers certainly have the resources to keep him there in Los Angeles. So the Orioles know they're not going to ever see him again in an Orioles uniform, and that's why there's so much disappointment here in town once they saw him in the Dodger blue today during that press conference.
Jerry Coleman, as we wrap it up, I compare him to Kawhi Leonard. I say he's a great offensive threat, but a better defensive player overall. Am I reaching there? Because we saw him play brilliant at third base, but he wants to play shortstop. He will for the Dodgers. Tell the Dodger fans what they're getting with Machado as a defensive player.
Well, he's a platinum glove third baseman. He's an average shortstop, so his best position is at third base, but he's adamant about playing shortstop. So if the Dodgers aren't going to let him play shortstop, he's definitely going to walk away from that. He seems to be mindset on playing that position. So that's the deal going forward. What's crazy is, here in Baltimore, one of the reactions was, JT, and this is a storm brewing, he talked about wearing number 8. We thought it was in, you know, respect to Cal Ripken. Apparently he's got a dog named after Kobe Bryant, a big Kobe Bryant fan. And we always thought that he appreciated Cal. Cal was kind of a mentor to him at times, and he said he wasn't wearing number 8 because of Cal Ripken, but because of Kobe Bryant, who went from 24 to 8, as you're well aware. So that's a storm brewing here in Baltimore. And, you know, he left with a lot of class and a lot of friends here in Baltimore, but he did at times not run out ground balls or fly balls. Yeah. So That will not go well in Los Angeles, as you're well aware. He's dealing with a much bigger and tougher media market than he was here in Baltimore, where there were a lot of softballs when I wasn't there, for sure.
I'll be at Raiders training camp next week. You spend a ton of time at Ravens training camp. Who will be the starting quarterback for the Ravens on opening day?
It'll be Joe Flacco. They're working Lamar Jackson in slowly but surely. They do not want to rush him. They certainly don't want to get him injured. They have the longest of preseasons and training camps. They still have 48 days to go. Besides the Bears, they're the only team practicing right now, and that's why Joe Flacco is only practicing for about an hour a day. So they're laying it out for a very passive schedule here in the early weeks. But Joe Flacco is poised to be the quarterback and probably get, you know, move on to another team after this year because it's going to be Lamar Jackson's, but he's playing for his next contract. And after seeing Kirk Cousins and Case Keenum and guys like that get paid to a degree, especially Cousins, who hasn't won a Super Bowl like Jimmy G, Flacco feels like he's set for another payday, but first he has to have a big year.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate you giving us some time heading into the weekend. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, JT.
Thank you. Jerry Coleman, who we had booked on the Machado move because we knew it was coming and appreciate we could talk to him. So he doesn't think he's a great shortstop. He's a platinum third baseman. The Dodgers will use him at shortstop. The Seager issue going forward, is he a rental or not? If you're a Dodger fan listening in Vegas, you got to love this move. You just got to love having this guy batting third. He could bat fourth. He can bat second. He could get hot. And that's the key to the Dodgers. The Dodgers now must win the World Series, not get there. It's been since 1988. That's a long time. Long time ago. And you got to get it done now. So Machado gives them another chance to hit a home run, losing in the eighth inning, another chance to make a great play to save a game. The Dodgers need that. And it seems like every team in baseball is desperate to get more pitching. Middle relief or whatever they could get to shore up their bullpen. Thanks again to Jerry Coleman. We're brought to you by the Henderson Hyundai Superstore on Boulder Highway in Henderson. I was there on Wednesday, met the entire staff that's there. If you're looking for any type of deal, they've done more deals in town than any Hyundai dealership. It's family-owned, no gimmicks. They'll get you the financing. They will get you the financing and the service that you need. Coming up, Steve Fezzik joins us. We'll ask Fez what he thinks about some of these win totals. He just tweeted out something interesting on the Buffalo Bills in their win total at Fezzik Sports. Bottom of the hour, we'll talk about NFL arrests. Why do we talk about the NFL and their arrests? Because they seem to have more, and it's the number one sport in the country. We'll do a deep dive on NFL players getting in trouble.
I think the number one thing that you'll want to talk about is the quarterback controversy that you'd love to create, that you've already created, that you will continue to create. And I will tell you the same thing exists there. It's still to be determined as to who's going to play quarterback for Alabama. So you can ask all the questions about it, but it's still to be determined.
Nick Saban's getting more bitter as the day gets longer. He's just out of his mind as of late. JT, back with you, courtesy of Golden Entertainment, the owner of PT's Happy Hour. Coming up here at the top of the hour, Yankees already trailing the Mets 3-0 in the top of the first. The Cubs got annihilated today. But the good news is Steve Fezzik is on an epic 50-21 MLB run. Fez going into the second half, so but we'll promote that on the way out here. But baseball's been good to you.
Yeah, fair and honest disclosure, I was on a 50-21 run, and I went 0-3 yesterday with the Cardinals letting me down in that game and the under. So this is a humbling business, JT. It's hard to stay hot.
Where do you stay with Machado going to the Dodgers? And when you try to take a look at the second half of the year, knowing that the Indians shore up their middle relief, the Dodgers get a defensive player who can hit well, you're expecting deals coming down that could really change the overall number on win totals and affect the team making a run to the postseason.
Yeah, I saw an adjusted Dodger win total that was only 91.5. I thought it was light. I'm gonna go out on a limb here. I hate to say the race is over, but the national media keeps talking about, oh, Arizona and the Dodgers, it's gonna come down to the final weekend. JT, it's not going to come down to the final weekend. Arizona's a pretender. Bold statement, Dodgers win the division by 8 games.
I've been saying all year that the Yankees and Red Sox will come down to the final series, let alone to the final week. Who do you give the edge to in that race?
Well, certainly since Boston is, you know, got the substantial lead now, And as well as they rake, I mean, let's face it, both teams hit the ball so well, but the Red Sox have just been a juggernaut. I don't see the Yankees catching them. Their pitching's not good enough. Now, maybe they can make some acquisitions.
You look at teams that, in your philosophy, watching teams that should unload. Are you one of those guys, if you're out of it, get rid of players and just start dumping, or are there certain players you'd like to keep around for the rebuilding process? We just had on a gentleman from Baltimore on what the Orioles are finally admitting to a rebuild. Do you sense what certain teams are doing this time of year?
I'm okay with the rebuild. I like the idea of jettisoning the guys that aren't good locker room guys and rebuilding that way. I think it's a great excuse, reason to retool, get rid of some salaries, and maybe get rid of some guys that might be a better fit somewhere else.
We're going to be doing a lot of college football coming up here over the next couple of weeks with our insiders. Your college football package is up. Can you talk about your analysis and what you do in the offseason getting ready for college football?
Yeah, I'll be the first to admit, I am 90% NFL, JT. Yeah. I am all in. You ask me what an NFL season win number is on any team, I can tell you to the nearest decimal point. I mean, I'm that specific about it. Raiders are 8.13, by the way, right now, as far as how many games they're supposed to win. But college, I'm much more reliant upon my group of guys, my insiders, my professional bettors that do it, and I get their information typically about 3 weeks before the college football season starts.
When you see Julian Edelman or a player getting a suspension and being out week one, do you look at win totals overall? Or I know you like to pounce on week one of the NFL coming up. Tell me about that first week in the NFL, not the picks, but what you like about jumping in that quickly.
Oh, I can give you picks. I just think that the numbers are oftentimes off, and they're oftentimes based upon last year's results and season win projections and power ratings that are not adjusted enough. Example, Buffalo Bills, currently my worst team in the NFL, JT. You can still play Baltimore, which is a perfectly capable, slightly above 500 team, and lay 4.5 to 5. I think that's a great bet right now. Julian Edelman, I have him worth a full point to New England. He's so important to Brady as his safety blankets, and losing Amendola, losing Cooks, I think that he will be missed the first 4 weeks of the season.
I had Travis Kelce on the other night, and the Chiefs, I believe, win totals 8.5 on this team, but they're breaking in a new quarterback. And I wonder with Alex Smith where that number would be as a Pro Bowler and a proven guy compared to Patrick Mahomes, where I expect him with a big arm to play well, but I've never seen him play.
Yeah, that's the problem. I hate to wager on the unknown. I've got to trust Kansas City that they know what they're doing. Going with Mahomes going forward, probably at the end of the year, Kansas City will be every bit as good as they were last year. It's a leap of faith to think that they're going to do that in September as Mahomes gets some seasoning.
There's two teams I think our listeners want to know about and get a hunch from you in where they're going. First, the Colts with Andrew Luck. We finally got information that he's ready to go, but again, it's training camp. I would assume they're going to shut him down for most of the preseason, but he's got to get his work in the preseason. How does that affect your mind when it comes to the season win total for Indy?
I'm not sure he has to get his work in during the preseason. That'd be a great question. Over under, JT, 20 passes Andrew Luck throws. You're going to go over or under?
Yeah, I would. My thing is, you got to get work in a game atmosphere. You're going to get the dress rehearsal in the third preseason game where they play through halftime and come out in the third quarter. So right in that game, he could have a lot of work there. But Fez, I'm not a fan of shutting these quarterbacks down. I shut down Brady and Aaron Rodgers in the preseason, but I got Carr with Gruden's brand new offense. I want to see that offense with Jordy Nelson a little bit in the preseason to know that they can play Monday Night Football against the Rams.
Yeah, it's a great point. It is on a case-by-case basis. Drew Brees and Tom Brady don't need the preseason. As far as Indianapolis, I think it's one of the best bets to play Indy over 6.5 wins, to play them against Cincinnati week one, lay 2.5. And I had this discussion with R.J. Bell, and R.J. is like, Fez, there's a good chance that Luck isn't 100%. And I come back and I say, you know, he doesn't need to be 100%. I just need the man to be behind center, because the second he's announced as the starting quarterback for the Colts week one, the Colts season win number goes up to 7.25, and I could play back and lock in a profit.
Steve Fezzik, as we wrap it up, and the Browns. Obviously, the Browns coming off zero, and everybody knowing that Baker Mayfield will see the field probably at some point, and the fact that Hugh Jackson should be on the hot seat, fortunate to have that job. He'll be more aggressive this year. What are you hearing about the Browns and their preparation for the preseason?
You know, if you go case by case in terms of their wide receivers, they're loaded, their defense, they're loaded, and break it all down and rate all of the aspects of Cleveland, and then Tyrod Taylor joins them, and he's maybe like the 24th best quarterback in the NFL, at least, if not better. Aggregated, they're an 8-win team. So was it Kaiser? Was Kaiser 90% of the problem? Was he 75% of the problem? How much of it is Hugh Jackson? If you believe it was a majority of Kaiser, you have to play the Browns over 5.5. If you have any money left from all the money you lost betting the Browns last year.
And finally, you've won the Super Contest twice. When you see the amount of enrollments now and the money, I mean, I know you're going to tell me you're in it to win it, of course, but looking at this realistically, it's almost starting to look like the World Series of Poker.
I have a prop I want to put up. When will the Super Contest, which had, I think, like 2,800 people, something like that last year, and the main event of the World Series has about 8,000. When will the Super Contest entry level go above the main event in poker? Because I think it's going to happen in 5 years, JT, because there are proxies, and you don't have to give up a week of your life to attend it like the main event in the World Series.
Yeah.
And like the main event, boy, it's just really, really difficult to beat 5,000 people.
What's on the Dream Pod this week?
We are going to be breaking down. We took a week off last week, and this next week we are going to be breaking down college football. You know, Brad Powers lives, breathes, eats college football. His expertise is phenomenal in college football. I will try to add as much as I can. That'll be coming up next week.
Thank you, Fez. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thank you.
Thank you, JT.
And Steve Fezzik at Fezzik Sports. Really appreciate him coming on. So he loves Indianapolis in the over of 6.5. A lot of people are saying that. He just needs Andrew Luck to be there. Doesn't need him to throw it 30 times a game. Just be under center to stabilize that team. Easier said than done. I mean, he's been damaged goods now for a while. This league, with all the issues that we have in this league with the anthem protest, we're going to be talking to a guest coming up right now. Elise Rapon's going to join us about NFL arrest. All the negative storylines that we have. We need Andrew Luck back. We really do. He's one of the biggest stars out there. And I thought he was the best quarterback talent drafted since John Elway. So that's ahead of Aaron Rodgers. Everybody else, forget about it. And Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, I thought he was that good. And I'm still holding out hope that he can get healthy again and play because he's very important to the league. He is a genius mentally. Physically, he's a bull. He's just got to stay healthy because you can't have a league with J.J. Watt being hurt, Andrew Luck being hurt. You can't have guys out missing full seasons or half a season. There's only so many superstars in this league. I'd like to see the league at full strength. When we come back, I think you'll be interested in this. We're going to talk about football arrests. What are the biggest arrests, the most common arrests? What teams lead the way with all of that? From the National Football Post, Elise Rapon joins us coming up next. We'll also get to Fairway Jay. Tiger's at even par. I think that's pretty good. He's only six back. Do you believe Tiger has a chance? You want to call the show? 876-1340. This is Fox.
I'm going to take a fine this year. Why not? I'm going to protest during the flag. That's what I'm going to say now. I'm going to take my fine. So it is what it is. I ain't going to let them stop me doing what I want to do. And if they want to have these battles between players and organizations, it's what it's going to be.
Casey from the Titans on potential national anthem protest. JT, back with you. You're going to see this. The president tweeted. I'll read the president NFL tweet coming up here. It's a doozy if you haven't heard it. Elise Rapon joins us. I'll be working with her with the National Football Post, and she has a new column up, which was very interesting here, getting a lot of hits. NFL arrests by month. Elise, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. Good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, too.
Let's get into this, because I find this fascinating, because I've been doing this 23 years, and I always have NFL arrest stories to talk about, but you broke it down by month. And let's get into that overall, because I would think that the summer months, or months when the players are off, would be the worst months, but it seems like there are some bigger months than May, June, and July.
Yeah, so it's interesting to look at what's going on in the off season. I also found it very different that the in the off season during May, June, and July, that there's a pretty high count of arrests, but the majority of them are clustered within the months from January to July.
Yeah, so January to July, in January 75, in February 114, March 108. And I would assume, obviously, this is when the players are not with the team. They're not having the direction of their coaches and team. They're going back home. Is there a lot to that? And can you talk about the type of arrest? I would assume DUI is near the top of the list.
Yeah, DUI, drugs is actually one of the top as well, which is highly more common in the off season. So in the drugs, we're seeing a lot more of the January, February, March, and also a spike in July, as well as 23 arrests. And with DUI, we have, for the most part, it is clustered in the off season when you would expect. And then as well, you have a spike in November with 81 arrests.
Elise Rapon is our guest from National Football Post. You also talk about assault, and this is really a big issue, and it always remains a big issue. This could also be man-on-man violence and also, you know, domestic violence overall. Can you talk about some of those numbers?
Yeah, sure. So with the assault and battery and domestic violence, those are definitely a couple of the most common types of arrests that we're seeing in this data set. And I thought that that was pretty interesting, but there have been studies that have been done that have linked CTE to violent behavior because of brain injuries causing disinhibition.
Yeah, I would think that'd be a big thing with CTE and players that are there. Did you break it down at all in regards to demographics or age? Because a lot of football players are in their early 20s. They play a violent sport. Are they more violent in their late teens and their early 20s? Is that a number you're looking at?
I actually have not looked into the age range of the players yet.
Mm-hmm.
In the next couple of posts, we'll be looking more into that and breaking it down by the players and what's going on in a more in-depth level.
Elise Rapon is our guest, National Football Post. This is a really big deal for the NFL and NFL PR. How difficult was it for you to get these arrest numbers and put this all together? I'm sure there's a lot of back work along the way. Do you have to ask for, you know, numbers from police departments locally? How do you put these numbers together?
You know, it wasn't terribly difficult. One of the people at NFL Post decided, you know, this would be kind of a hit. So mm-hmm. I took about a couple of weeks and did some research and ended up finding it on the web and didn't end up having to contact anyone. But yeah, when it all came together, it definitely turned out to be something much more interesting than I had expected.
Yeah, it really is a deep dive. This is at nationalfootballpost.com, nationalfootballpost.com. And are you getting any pushback from the NFL on this, or is anybody pushing back at you saying, hey, we don't need to see this, because this is the type of research that I think is very interesting to a lot of people, considering the bad PR that the NFL's been getting the last couple of years?
You know, honestly, no, I haven't gotten any pushback from the NFL yet, and I hope that that does not happen. But I think that this could be, you know, a good thing to look at, because it's something that can be, you know, important for the NFL to take time with. It can raise awareness with players and think more in depth about stuff like this.
No doubt about it. I think coaches in the league need to know and need to look at this graph that you have up here. Again, the biggest months for the NFL arrest were 114 in February, 112 in May, 102 in July. And what was up with November with 110? They're in season that time of year. I know teams, you know, have bye weeks and all that, but did that number jump out at you in November at 110?
Yeah, that jumped out at me as well. It's actually the majority of it is due to the DUIs, because the majority of DUIs occur in November.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay.
Which is very interesting.
So the majority of DUIs, period, are in November?
Yes, correct.
Wow, I learned something new there. I'm looking forward to working with you down the road on a couple of the podcasts and the work we'll be doing at National Football Post. Really enjoy this. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much.
All right, there's Elise Rapon. Very interesting there. Bobby, did you know that? Most DUIs are in November. So obviously Thanksgiving has to have something to do with that. The biggest drinking night of the year where I'm from in New York is the night before Thanksgiving, right? The Wednesday before Thanksgiving. And I wouldn't have guessed that. I would have guessed that there were more DUIs in the summer. I would have thought around the 4th of July, Memorial Day to Labor Day, that would be that. And, yeah, the spike on this graph in November jumped out at me. 876-1340 is the number. When we come back, a quick hit from Fairway Jay on what happened at the Open Championship. Jordan Spieth went low today. Tony Finau I like a lot. It was great to see Ricky Fowler get up there on the leaderboard again. So it's going to be good. We got a great leaderboard coming in, but how do you bet it? What are some of the sharper plays to play at the Open coming into Saturday and Sunday? Fairway Jay is next. We're brought to you by Golden Entertainment. JT back with you. Welcome back to the show. A big show tonight with Tom Looney as we wrap it up. Chris Mannix, our Fox Sports Radio Yahoo NBA insider. Jessica Marksberry will join us from golf.com, live from Carnoustie. RJ Bell, our buddy from pregame.com. Fairway Jay joins me right now, the professional sports analyst. I follow him all the time, and I love your golf insights. Smart that you faded Bubba, who's never good in weather and some issues like that. But I like John Rahm, like you. What happened to the guys who did not make the cut, DJ, Rahm, and Bubba?
Good to be with you, JT. It's fun to watch the Open, isn't it? We haven't seen the weather I think we want, but you know the top players, John Rahm, top five in the world, DJ number one. Justin Thomas falls off today and misses the cut as well. You know, a lot of it is putting the ball in play here. I know DJ had trouble with some out of bounds in the opener, and Rahm is a good example of the mentality it takes to handle the conditions, and they haven't even been that difficult. But he makes a triple bogey on seven today and then follows it up with double and bogey. And clearly it carries over to him, and he's got a issue, I think, as people have talked about, whether it's anger or just a competitiveness that he just can't let go and when things don't go his way, and that happened to him. And those are the kind of players when you're wagering and kind of maybe even if you're watching what happens to him, but especially if you're wagering, I thought Rahm was ready. He's played well in the recent lead-ups to it, to the Open, and I thought he was ready to take the next step. But he's a player in the marketplace that is overvalued in terms of betting. The talent is there, but the you think of it like a pitcher. You know, a lot of talent, but he just can't put it all together and find the strike zone. And when things kind of go wrong, they just don't recover.
Fairway Jay's our guest. I love this leaderboard. I was at the Masters only once in my life when Zach Johnson won, and I know he's a short ball hitter. He's 6 under. He was minus 4 today. Shoots a 67, and he could knock those balls into the green from the fairway as a short hitter. Tommy Fleetwood can be long at times, but brings the ball in nicely. And how about the Vegas connection with Pat Perez, who just gets over his ball, takes a hybrid, whatever it is, and hits it as far as he can. Talk about the top of that leaderboard and Kevin Kisner, who fell apart on 18 today, but played good enough at 1 under par to be at 6 under.
You know, Zach Johnson, of the names and the major winners and people that play the game professionally that don't get enough respect, he's one in the marketplace from wagering that just does not get his odds are always higher, and significantly so coming in. He actually took money, though, in the win wagering pools. He took money from like 80 maybe at the start a month before the tournament down to around 30 to 1 at the start of the tournament, which was surprising. But normally he's just not priced like other guys that have won at his level. So he's always accurate. He's a good scrambler on the green, a pretty good putter. I don't think these top guys, either one of Kisner or Zach Johnson, I don't think they're going to win.
It's just a thought and opinion on my end, but I do like Kistner's game a lot. He's really undervalued. But when you look at, you know, how do they perform in the Open and how do they play links, Kistner has had a 50th finish. He's been in the 70th finish and a cut. And you wonder now with everything on the line as they move to the weekend, and will he be there Sunday? We'll see a lot. Well, I think we'll see a number of players, you know, just fall down the board here. Others that get out early can maybe post an early score, will have a chance to potentially make a move. And that's where you see the guys down four, maybe three under. And we certainly got Fowler in there and Spieth in there. Those guys will probably make a little move tomorrow. And I don't think at the top of the leaderboard, like I said, I'm not betting. Right now, Fleetwood has now made the favorite, 5.5-1 to win it. Zach Johnson is right behind him. I don't think Johnson, Kistner, and Perez, who I like the Las Vegas guys and connections, and there's a number of them have been in and made the cut. Ryan Moore, Adam Scott, Charlie Hoffman. Perez is another guy where he is. His mentality isn't as positive, and he kind of gets really frustrated when things get down. But all the credit, the guy's been ahead one top 10 in 17 majors, JT, but he's right there this weekend to start.
Fairway, Jay, as we wrap it up. Three big names, Rory McIlroy, back-to-back 69s. He's 4-under. I love the performance of Jordan Spieth today. Shot 4-under. He's 3-under for the tournament. And here comes Ricky Fowler, who shot 2-under. And I like Ricky's game and his creativity, what he can do around the greens, 3-under. Who do you like the most out of Rory, Jordan Spieth, or Ricky Fowler?
I'll go with Fowler, and here's why, JT. His 69 today was the worst score he could have posted. He hit it better than that. He played better. He missed a short one, pretty short one on 18 to get birdie and settled for par there. And when you have a guy that, if he can just keep his confidence, which I think is strong, he's got the game. He knows he can play here well. He just didn't. He's striking it well. He's sticking in there. Just the score wasn't reflective. Whereas Spieth, he's scrambling more. We know his putting game's been, but it's been way off this year. And I don't think he's going to make as big a move. Rory, I never discount him when grew up Northern Ireland and plays this weather. And I would never discount him. I've been on him on a number of majors. Of the three, he's the one that's got the lead of them. He's 4-under. Tied for six, but I think Fowler still has it in him to make a move and be there, at least have really a good chance. All those three you mentioned, they just want to be within a couple, no more than three back, one into Sunday, but a couple or maybe one back, possibly a big round tomorrow. And it's going to be there for the taking. The weather doesn't look bad. The early guys, I think, will still have the better of it. So the leaders will have maybe a little bit more wind, but not much, less than 15 miles an hour.
All right, last one, Tiger and Phil. I fly my Phil flag. Tiger's even. Phil is even. Tell me about both of them and the fact that Tiger, look, if Tiger wants to shoot even par and be 10 strokes back but be even par and say that's a victory, okay. But is he going to start to take out the driver now and try to track this field down, or am I going to still see one iron off the tee and 80 yards behind everybody else? What do you expect from Tiger and Phil with less than 2 minutes in the show?
I still, if I was looking at between the two, and I didn't see Mickelson's round and get a good look at what he did today, I still like Woods. Because his mentality, I still think is stronger. He's done this before, and I do think you're right when you start to mention how will he play the course. I think he's going to let it loose a little bit more. The weather's not going to impact. He'll be able to drive it, go a little for distance so he can get a little shorter iron into the greens. And I did see some of the pin placements tomorrow. It looks like they're going to be tucked pretty good near the edges of the greens. So you're going to see a lot of risk reward, and you're going to have to place it and have it out there enough. We're obviously in play, but have a chance to bring it in. And I prefer Woods of the two. Didn't think he'd make enough noise to win here, but I thought of the American players. He's performing pretty well. Yeah. He's obviously not going to win unless he has a huge round tomorrow to get back in.
Thank you, Jay. Always good to connect with you again. All the best. We'll talk to you soon.
You too, JT. Thanks again.
You got it. Fairway Jay. You heard him with Ed Graney today. Jumps on with us here. He's got some good golf picks. Rory McIlroy, updated odds from Jeff Sherman over at the Super Book. We got Fleetwood at 11-2, Johnson 13-2, Rory McIlroy 7-1, Spieth 8-1, Fowler 9-1, Tiger Woods 50-1. So that's from the LV Super Book. Jeff Sherman put that out a little while ago. If you're betting golf, bet with your wallet, not with your head. It'll be fun to watch it. I like this time of year because you can stay up late and start watching it, and you can wake up really early and watch it. But you got to watch it in that window because it's not on this time. You just have to watch the replay. Good week, Bobby. We had, 16, 17 guests, good guests overall. Next week, I'm up in Napa, Thursday, Friday at Raiders training camp. Lot going on with the Raiders that I'll be able to comment on Monday heading into the weekend here. John Gruden's hosting a party today up in the Bay Area for Raider fans at Ricky's, which is the number one Raider bar in the world. It's Raider Fan Appreciation Day. Gruden picked up the entire tab, the catering, the drink. His son is DJing, and it's going to be all over social media. We'll have Coach Gruden on next Thursday or Friday from Napa, as I'll be up there hosting Alumni Weekend as the Raiders bring up over 100 alumni to kick off Raider training camp next week in Napa. Remember, right now, 6 minutes. Anywhere you are in the Valley, there's almost 60 PTs. Sierra Gold, Sean Patrick's, pull over. Happy hour starts. Reduce, great food menu, spirits, unbelievable service, and sports. PTs, my home for sports and great food. Have a great weekend, everybody. Looney joins me at the top of the hour. We'll reset with the president's NFL tweet.